Every other month, I'd probably.
I'd be like, oh, like, I don't really know what I want to do. Like, what should I do? And I'd ask for her advice. And anyways, it was just like so many meetings revolving of like what I wanted to do. And then even transferring to Berkeley, I was like, I don't even know like what I want to do when I'm there. Like, should I take a year off before I transfer? So many thoughts and so many like emotions. And then once I got there, because you have to pick a major, once I got there, I was like, oh, this major is not for me. So I actually ended up taking a year off or a semester off. And kind of exploring Berkeley's majors and which one is probably the best suited for me. And previously to like doing that, I went ahead and like met with the department that seemed most fitting to me. And I met with the professors and like the community. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I could thrive in this space. So that's why I went ahead and transitioned to Latino studies. So yeah, you definitely don't know what you're going to do, nor what your journey is going to look like. And I think that's totally okay. I feel like most of us, even now, as adults or, post grad, even us in our careers at an older age, we're still kind of trying to figure it all out. And our path isn't, super linear. So I think that's really something important to keep in mind is you don't have to have it all figured out. Just take the things that you like now and go with them. And the things that you don't like so much, it's totally okay. That's just who you are. And I think that's what makes us all like really special. So yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Erica. Well said. All right, I'm going to move on to the next question. So next question again is open to everyone. What skills or knowledge did you learn throughout your time for our LPC alumni students, specifically at LPC? So skills or knowledge that you learned during your time at LPC, and then for everyone else, what skills or knowledge did you learn in your bachelor's degree program that you feel are most useful right now in your careers? So open to everyone.
Okay, I'm gonna hop on this one. So I think for transfer students specifically, I think one of the things that's overlooked that we do really well is that when you're transferring from a community college to a four-year institution, that's a lot of bureaucracy and you have to talk to so many people. And what they don't tell you about higher education is that half of it is bureaucracy and doing well in it. Like, yes, it's content and yes, it's you're doing well in your classes, but half of it is like, I want to apply to this fellowship or I want to get this like scholarship or this financial aid. I want to appeal this class. I want to do it pass, no pass, and like a lot of the benefits that you can get from higher education comes with meeting with lots of people, filling out lots of forms. I'm sure Erica had to do a lots of forms when she took that semester off. And if she even wanted to know that she like had that possibility. So I think that as transfers, that's a skill that we learn just because when the transfer process in and of itself is just so many forms, and so many things, and that's a skill that I think is really useful that you should not undervalue when you're transferring to your four-year institution, because that is a difference that I did notice between people who had started as a freshman and then people who were transfers. Like they just had like less familiarity being like, oh, like where do I go? But this one as a transfer, like I already know. So I think that's really valuable. And then second of all, building relationships. In community college, it's so much easier to build relationships with your professors because sometimes you have a 30-person class and they see you in class on top of the day. And in college, sometimes you have 2,000-person classes, 200-person classes. You have overworked graduate students who are grading your papers. Your professor will not learn your name. So I think that when you're in community college, it's so much easier to build that relationship with your professor that can lead to so many other things. Like sometimes they'll be, I have professors that have been like, oh, hey, like I have this research project if you want to like hop on it, just because like we had like already like established a relationship. So relationships really are the gateway to opening doors for you when you transfer to that 4 year. So that's something that I think also is really, really important to cultivate in order to be successful. So I would definitely say, yeah, two things, navigating the bureaucracy and building those relationships are just really nice things to have in your back pocket that you do have as a transfer. When you're going off.
Thank you. Yes, so true. Yeah.
I
Other
just kind of
panelists.
want to, sorry, if I could add on to Mariana's point, I definitely 100% agree with, creating relationships and really like making yourself visible in a 200-person class, in a 2,000-person class. And
I mean, the thing is, it's like you're practicing that now at community college, like having to deal, like she said, dealing with the paperwork of like, oh, I want to transfer here, or look at my credits. Is this enough? Like, versus the people who are already there already have that all displayed out for them and organized for them, versus in transfer students' cases, it's a bit different. And the thing is, it's like you never really know who you're going to come across. So possibly you're, who knows, philosophy professor in college might help you later on down the road when you're like, oh, they are doing this research project, like blah, blah, blah. Like, I want to get involved into that. Or, oh, they know this person who knows that person and can get me into that industry. So I think it's really important to like really create relationships with those professors that you see that are supportive and want to help you. And at the end of the day, like people enjoy helping people. So typically like professors and people in higher positions will always be receptive to that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Maybe one last share if someone wants to.
Can I make one shameless plug for writing and analytical skills? Hard to come by in the workplace. And especially as all of our attention spans have shrunken into really small phrases and shorthand, having the skills write and express arguments in written form is so incredibly valuable in any career path you choose that depends on the written word. And I think for those of us in local government and any form of kind of public agency work, the written form still has so much importance for today and for the future.
Yes, very true. So I wear two hats, Las Positas. Students might know counselors also teach classes. And so that's a lot of feedback that I give in the classes that I teach. Please write in full and complete sentences. Please check your grammar. As Rosanna's saying, you know, I think a lot of our students tend to write academic papers in the way that they would maybe put that as a post on Facebook. And so taking time now to practice and get down, you know, your writing skills, your critical thinking skills, how to articulate all of that in the written word is really important. So make sure you guys are focusing and emphasizing on that in your time at Las Positas. All right. Okay. So panelists, thank you for sharing about your educational background and experiences and advice for our students. I want to switch gears now, and I'm going to ask some of our prepared questions that have to do about your professional background and experiences. We'll spend the next 10 or so minutes on these questions, and then we'll go ahead and look at any questions that our students brought up in the chat. So first question related to your professional background. So some of you again already said this, but if we can just go around one more time, because I also believe we started our recording a little bit late. So if we can just go around one more time, and if I can hear from everyone, state what your current position is. If let's do that first, and then I'll ask a follow-up question after that. So if we can just go really quickly, everyone, just state what your current position is. Thank you. Oh, and David, let's start with you.
Okay, I currently serve as the Director of Housing for the City of Dallas. And in this role, what I'm doing is investing taxpayer dollars in the development and preservation of housing.
Thank you. And then Jean, if you can go next.
Yes, I'm a legislative affairs liaison with the Department of Transportation, otherwise known as Caltrans. Actually just started about 2 months ago. So my role is to serve as an intermediary between elected officials and our department, and our district is the Bay Area. So all the different political officials that have questions or issues with Caltrans, I'm the one that they go through and try to resolve any questions they may have.
Thank you. And then Judge Hernandez, if you want to go next.
So I'm a judge on the LA Superior Court here in LA. I sit in the Pomona Courthouse, and I'm currently one of two judges in this court that handle civil matters. So unlimited civil matters, anything from the filing of a lawsuit up until a trial involving more than $25,000. So, you know, anything that you can think of with regards to civil actions, not criminal, but civil, like personal injury cases, sexual battery cases, discrimination cases, investor fraud cases, all that, those types of cases I would handle from cradle essentially to grave.
Okay. And then Judge Hernandez, students have access to all of our panelists' bios. If you want to maybe briefly just touch on also your profession before becoming a judge.
Sure. So after I graduated law school, I was fortunate enough to be hired by the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. And I worked in the Civil Rights Division for about 3 years, primarily doing voting rights work in Arizona and New Mexico, within voting rights, specifically language rights in those two areas. I spent a lot of time in the Navajo Nation working on language rights with those communities there. So after about 3 years or so, we moved back to California, and I worked at a firm that's no longer in existence. And I did a lot of securities litigation. I only did that for about 2 years. Fortunately, I was able to come back to LA and work as a assistant U.S. attorney for about 13 years, handling primarily criminal matters until I got appointed by Governor Brown in 2012 to the bench. And I did about 6 years of criminal work as a judge, handling anything from misdemeanors to felony trials. And then I transitioned over to the civil world about 3 years ago.
All right, thank you. Rosanna, if you want to go next.
So I'm the assistant city manager for the city of Antioch, which is in eastern Contra Costa County and is about 115,000 people. I work alongside the city manager primarily to oversee a number of key initiatives that launched as the council majority changed in our city. So I've had the really exciting assignments for a period of transition and change in the city as we develop our homeless response, a whole array of youth development related services, as well as police reform and police oversight. Those are kind of the three primary areas of my responsibility. And prior to that, I served for 9 years as a city manager in Southeastern California in the city of Raleigh, which was about 27,000 people.
Thank you. And then our LPC alum. So Mariana, you want to talk about your current profession?
Yes, hello everyone. So I'm interning at the National Air and Space Museum. I've been there since June, and I'm helping on a Latino futurism and Afrofuturism project. And I applied because this was rare, because as a humanities major, oftentimes you're told, oh, the soft skills you have, yes, but the content that you're learning, maybe not as applicable in the job market. But here I can actually apply the content that I'm learning, which is really cool. And basically for the Latino futurism project, we're interviewing artists that are well-renowned in that field. And then for Afrofuturism, I led the outreach in order to get submissions and proposals for a conference that we are hosting in January. And then in November, I'm going to be transitioning to the California Attorney General's office, where I'm going to be a deputy press secretary full-time. And that's essentially just communicating the Attorney General's office is like actions to the public, answering questions from reporters and communications work.
Thank you. And then Luis, if you want to go next.
Yeah, so I'm currently a financial aid advisor at Los Positos College. But this is actually my last week, because Monday I'll start my new job at a humanitarian nonprofit where I'll be teaching financial literacy to refugees.
Cool. All right, thank you. And then Erica.
Yeah, so I am currently working in tech. I work at Cisco as an ADR, so I'm working as an account development rep in cybersecurity. So yeah.
Thank you. All right, so one question, or my next question actually is going to be open to everyone. So in what ways, if any, has your heritage and culture influenced the way or the work that you do now, or the career that you aspire to be in? So for instance, does your culture heritage shape the lens through which you see the work that you perform? And then if so, if you want to talk a little bit maybe about that, maybe describing also your work responsibilities, what a typical day might look like, but how that work maybe is shaped through the lens of your culture and heritage.
I'll start out. Say a few things if you can hear me.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Thanks, Steve.
Oh, you can hear me?
I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, I had an unstable connection. So one of the primary programs that we serve here is housing rehabilitation for low-income homeowners. And the typical household that comes to seek our services are lower-income senior citizens. In many respects, the people I'm serving remind me of my mother, my elderly mother, or my grandmother, people who don't know a whole lot about how to deal with lots of issues.
David, can you hear me? It sounds like your connection just went out.
I grew up.
Let me see. So I'm gonna, David, I don't know if you can hear me. So I'm gonna chat at David and let him know his connection is also does sound unstable, like it's going out. David, I'm gonna chat you. I don't know if you can hear me or not, but that connection does sound a little bit unstable. So maybe if someone else wants to answer while I let David know, and maybe we can come back to him if that works out a little bit better. Does anyone else have a response to that? That was about maybe the way in which your culture, heritage shapes the lens through which you complete your work, do your work.
Well, I'll add what I think about that particular question. I think it's important, you know, at least for me, I think I've been in the workforce for over 25 years now, and I think only two of them have been in the private sector. So I think where my culture and my heritage comes into play is the fact that, you know, growing up in where I grew up in LA and having the support of, you know, my wife as well, who's also a servant, a public servant. She's a teacher. I think that's been very important for us as a couple to, you know, continue serving our community, wherever that community has been, whether it's been in DC, in Arizona, Northern California, or Southern California. That's a big important component of our lives. And that's something that's always been very important with regards to us, even doing this, you know, trying to encourage folks that, you know, I see myself 30 years ago, you know, thinking that there's endless opportunities out there, or that there's opportunities to take advantage of, you know, the little that we can do. That's always been kind of a driving force for me. And to the extent that, you know, public service is sometimes doesn't necessarily get the respect that it does. I'm a true believer that if you have good people serving the public, you're going to have a good public. But if you don't necessarily have a good public, you're not necessarily a good public servants. You're not going to have a good public. So something to keep in mind. That's always in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Thank you, Judge Hernandez. David, should we try see if that connection works?
Can you hear me any better now?
I can hear you better now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What I was saying is that one of the primary programs that we run here is a housing rehabilitation program for lower income homeowners. The typical profile of a homeowner that we serve are elderly citizens, usually those who have nowhere else to turn. And I'm particularly sensitive to it because, you know, this is something I've done with my own mother, and I've worked with her through challenges with housing and housing instability, just growing up as a kid. So, you know, when I'm working with these people, trying to figure out how to navigate an application and compile all the documentation that's needed to prove that they're income eligible, I take an extra effort to translate the bureaucratic terminologies, the jargon, and help them figure out how they can use the services, because I know that they need it most. And if I don't do it, who will?
Yeah, thank you. That's right on to kind of Judge Hernandez's point too about being good public servants. So thank you. Anyone else want to respond to that?
I want to add on to David because it's kind of like similar to mine. So my senior year, I interned at the California Attorney General's office, and I was lucky enough to serve under the first Latino Attorney General. And so a lot of his agenda was pro-immigrant, pro-farm workers' rights, and just working at that office was really illuminating because you just see how many, first of all, there are so many things to sue about. And like, there are just so many different types of problems to tackle. And that was just, it's both disheartening and empowering at the same time. But what that really made me see is that essentially no one else is going to advocate for Latino rights except Latinos. And no one else is going to want to protect our community except us. And that was just the reality of it. And of course, making cross-cultural alliances and like people of color helping each other is important. But like at the end of the day, like the pandemic happened and Congress didn't care about farm workers and they were dying in the fields. And the Attorney General was doing something about it because he was Latino. And he was like, I care about what's going on in my community, you know? So I think that's something that's definitely informed me as I've kind of had like my own professional experience about it, because it's exactly as David said, like, if you don't do it, no one else is going to, you know, and it's important that we stand up for ourselves and that we fight for our own rights, because we live in a country where that's not a given. That's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, thank you. Well said, Mariana. All right. Anyone else want to respond to this question?
I would say that, you know, there's still lots of opportunity for Latinos to be the first to do something for the first time, you know, to be something. And as a result of that, we all need to keep in mind, as we've had opportunities and doors open to us, to keep our eye out for that person who's got that special talent that can also be part of future decision making. And so, you know, recognizing how fortunate each of us may have been in getting opportunities, we need to never forget that there are so many others behind us that still have the opportunity to be the first. And, you know, the opportunities are endless, but if there aren't folks making connections and actively attempting to engage, that gap is something that will never be addressed. So, I think all of us who have had the chance to grow should never forget that there's so much more yet to be done.
That's true. And so for our students in this Zoom workshop, students, remember, professionals, we are all looking to assist those behind us, as Rosanna is saying, maybe not all of us, but a lot of us. So students, another important skill is networking, using your networks, reaching out. Don't be afraid to, send someone a message through LinkedIn. Cold call someone, email someone, explain, you know, what your goals are, what your intentions are for your future career, and asking, about opportunities in any one of our offices. So definitely students learn and build on that skill of networking. All right. So with that, I'm going to just turn it over to our UndocuAlly colleagues and see if any students have questions. I want to make sure we honor their questions before we begin wrapping up. So Francis or Terrianne or Elaine, did any students chat questions at you guys, if you want to ask those?
Yes, there's a really good question. There's actually quite a few, but I think one that stood out to me is, I know in many fields, making connection is important. How were you successful in making connections? So I'm interested in entering the legal field, and I would really love to hear from Judge Hernandez.
Well, I was going to comment after Michelle made that comment about networking, because I think at the end of the day, and this is something that I only recently learned, you know, when I was probably in my 40s, which is a long time ago. But anyway, that you don't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily, your school does not define you. The undergraduate degree that you get does not define you. The law school that you're going to go to doesn't define you. You know, I speak from experience where, you know, I observe attorneys every day in my court, you know, from some of the best law schools that aren't as skilled as folks that are from, you know, non-traditional law schools. So I want to clarify that, you know, and make and stress that point, that it doesn't necessarily matter exactly where you go. It's just, you need to go and you just need to get it done. Whether, you know, it's Cal or UC Merced, it doesn't matter. And I'm speaking from experience, you know, looking 30 years in the past to know that if I had not gone to Cal, hopefully with the motivation and drive that I have, I would still be sitting here talking to you today. It doesn't, you know, that's my kind of overarching point, that it's not so much the school that defines you, it's who you are that will define you. But certainly networking and meeting people and having a reputation that people, you know, believe in you and trust you, and not necessarily, you're not someone who just isn't reasonable, isn't someone that, you know, people like, all that stuff comes into play, not only, you know, with regards to the students today, but, you know, 30 years later. So it's something to keep in mind, but I can't stress enough that getting it done as opposed to where you're getting it done is more important. And, you know, I speak from experience because I got the opportunity to go to Cal, but when I went to Cal, I didn't know necessarily how to write. You know, I was in subject A, I struggled writing, you know, English was my second language, I grew up speaking Spanish, so I know that the struggles that, you know, a lot of the community that's potentially at Las Positas is struggling with and thinking about, and, you know, my point in saying this is that there's no more, the best motivation is one's drive, and I think if you have that drive, it doesn't matter where you go. Doesn't matter, you know, what law school you go to. If you're going to be a good lawyer, it's going to show, irrespective of your what you're hanging up on the wall. So, you know, that's just kind of general. Obviously, there's specifics in terms of what you would do with, you know, how to go to a particular law school or what kind of job you should do. But those are the follow-up questions. The first question you should have is just kind of doing it. So
thank you.
Can I add on to that?
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to offer was the way I met you, right? So about 20 years ago, Michelle had reached out to a friend of hers who she went to college with, and told her about a job at GAO, the U.S. Government Accountability Office. And the friend happened to be staying with me when she came in town to interview for that job. So I asked her, I said, oh, what are you doing here? Who are you meeting with? And she said, oh, let me tell you about it. You might be interested. So that friend didn't end up taking the job, but I did. Fast forward 20 years, I ended up working on a critical report through GAO that put me in position to move over to the US Department of Housing and Urban Development, that later put me in the position to run a housing department, right? My point is, you never know, people always talk about networking, networking, networking. It doesn't always mean that you have to know the CEO or someone who's got a bunch of contacts. Many times it could be your peers, right? Utilize whoever you've got right? Because you never know who's talking to who knows what's coming up and where that opportunity is gonna pop up that could create a domino effect for your career, right?
And David's lying. It hasn't been 20 years.
I wanted to jump in too here.
Yes, Jean, go ahead. And don't talk about how long we've known each other.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that I've known Michelle for many, many, many years. We took a number of political science classes together. We worked on projects together. So yeah, the connections go back. With David, I know him. We used to do our work study together. Work study? Yeah. Together we had, we worked a couple years together, right? So yeah, the networking is definitely key because it can last a lifetime.
I just wanted to touch on one thing. I know we're running low on time. And so with networking, I think, like they said, like you never know who you're going to run into. And like, for example, we have a judge online right now, right? I'm sure he's more than welcome to reaching out to any, or you having reaching out to him and like maybe creating like a 15-minute like info session chat via Zoom, kind of like asking him questions, picking his brain. Like there's even people on this call that might have a career that you're interested in, and like don't feel scared to like send them over a message on LinkedIn being like, hey, I really liked your chat. Do you mind if, I ask you some questions on Tuesday or Wednesday after 5 p.m. And then they'll gladly reach out back and set up a time. And maybe that could, really clarify some things moving forward for you. So just definitely have the idea that everyone's willing to help and eager to help you. And don't like, this is your oasis, and make it what you want. Also, what he was also saying about, doesn't really matter where you go to attend school. I definitely think of like where you would prosper the most. Maybe it's not a huge university like Berkeley or UCLA. Maybe it's something smaller and private like St. Mary's, or who knows what it might be. We don't know like what your environment is that you thrive in. So definitely pick that. Don't pick like the name, like pick where you think you'll be the most successful in.
Thank you, Erica. You're a future counselor in training. So one quick thing I wanted to say before we move on, we might have time for one more student question, and then we'll I'll do a closing question. But one thing I wanted to just attach to this discussion about networking, and you never know what you're going to learn from even your peers. So when I was an undergrad at Berkeley, I did a one summer internship in DC. And that summer internship in DC was with a lot of other students who were there interning. And this one, random conversation I had with a student, it might've even been at a bar. The student was mentioning this scholarship program, and students who earned this scholarship were then given the opportunity to go on and get their master's degrees fully paid for. So this one conversation that I had with a student that could have been at a bar led me to researching what this scholarship program was all about. I researched it that next year when I went back to Cal. I applied and I got it. So this was during the summer between my junior and senior year at Cal. And so that one conversation that I had with this student stayed with me, did the research, applied, got it. And that allowed me, guys, to go on after I graduated from Berkeley to the University of Washington and get my master's degree in public administration fully paid for. So you never know where these networking conversations are going to lead to and what opportunities are going to present. But like Judge Hernandez was saying, it's all about putting in the work, hustling, having that grit, that resilience, knowing that, believing in yourself and having that confidence that you can do it, you just have to do it. My example here of getting this, nugget of information then led me to go get my master's degree fully paid for, which then allowed me the opportunity to get that job at the GAO that David was talking about, then led to lots of opportunities from there. But definitely use your networks, talk to friends, create those peer groups, because you never know what kind of information that's going to lead to in your personal lives. So do we have one more student question? And then I'll ask my closing question.
Terry, I believe you have a question, right?
Francis has the question, I think.
Oh, Francis, you're on mute.
Sorry, I have to scroll back through the chat. I apologize for that. There was a question about someone interested in getting their enrolling in a doctorate program, and what would be, so let me just ask the question directly. What should be my big attention grab to get advisors' attention when applying for a program, a doctorate program?
I'll speak if no one else does, right? So I've got a lot of PhDs in my family. And one of the things that I've learned from students who want to go that route is you've got to figure out what that professor is researching, what their research focuses on, and whether you want to pursue that same research or something related. That's typically your hook to get them to pay attention to you. Because what you'll find is they love talking about themselves and the work that they're doing. But so if you use that as your lead-in, then you can expose them to the value that you bring to the table, all right? And once they've had an opportunity to look at you, now you've got them hooked, and they can serve as a resource for you, either in recommendations or serving on a panel. But you've got to know what they study and research.
Thank you, David. I just want to also mention that Dr. Katie Egan, who is one of our English professors, mentioned that you should mention the research of people at the school that you connect with. So along the same lines as what David just said, do a little research about the school and the program.
And just, I don't know how Terri Ann and other doctorate holders feel, but I was petrified of this when I was in undergrad. I was at Cal too, and I was feeling like I had to know what my dissertation was going to be on. So, you know, I was just like, what do I say? But, you know, like the speaker said, I mean, I think the people you're contacting will be impressed that you know something about the place you're going to. You're picking it, like Michelle said earlier, based on what call, or maybe it was the young woman, Taurus, I can't tell what your full name is, but, you know, the small college that you've chosen to go to, you know, that's more of a fit for you. You know, they'll be engaged in the fact that you have done some research and have some ideas, and that's okay. It doesn't have to feel like a fully formed idea even.
Thank you. Okay, so I know we're running out of time. I want to ask just one quick wrap up, and all the panelists, if you want, feel free, but just make it like a really quick response. And then we're going to post the survey in the chat for students to fill out. And then also that's how you're going to get your extra credit, students. So my last wrap up question is, what advice to our panelists, what advice would you give our students about continuing to be successful within their major once they transfer to their university? So you can think of this in terms of what kept you on track when you were at your four-year university that helped you finish and get that bachelor's degree. So if you have one nugget of advice that you want to let our students know, and then any panelists that would like to answer that.
I think this is really short and sweet, but for me, it was like, in those times of doubt, just remember that you were accepted at whatever institution you were accepted in, because they needed you and they wanted you. So don't feel like, oh, I don't belong here. Like, they need you, they want you, and you're here for a reason. So just keep going.
I would say take whatever you can from the institution. College is expensive, and use all the resources that they give you, whether it be career counselors, whether it's your major counselor, like any person that is there to answer your questions, meet with them and ask them all the questions that you have, and just utilize everything that you can would be my advice.
Yeah, I would say just don't let your struggle define you. We all had struggles as undergrads, but to the extent that you know that there are a lot of us out there that had that kind of same struggle and fought through it and made it, I think that's something hopefully to take inspiration from, you know, during those times of frustration, some more than struggle, but sometimes the frustration of being in school and thinking, you know, you're just not going anywhere. You're going somewhere. You just got to do it a day at a time.
For me, it was finding a peer group to be your support, especially if you're going far away from home, you need to find people that will support you.
I would suggest just time management. If you're working and going to school, which I know a lot of us, that was part of our university experience. Managing time will be something that you take as a skill into everything you do in the future. So figuring out ways to make the most of your day and get your work done at the same time as getting, you know, if you're working at the same time outside of the campus, you know, having a chance to juggle it all and do it successfully. It's probably the hardest time of your life. After that, things are a lot easier when you don't have to do it all day long, every day. So best luck to everybody. And yeah, hope we can continue to be a resource for you in the future.
Yeah, and similar to what Jean said, just make sure you surround yourself with people who are going to motivate you and push you, whether that be friends or family or teachers, whatever that might be. Surrounding yourself with those people that are going to motivate you is really important.
I'll just add, don't give up. Don't allow yourself to get intimidated. Right. When you look at all of the hoops and hurdles that you had to overcome through community college, right, you have some battle wounds on you. Use those battle wounds, apply them to college, especially if you select to go to a big college, because you'll be challenged again. But use what you learn through this experience and you'll do fine.
So I want to thank, you know, Michelle for leading the panelists and for all the panelists for coming here and speaking to the students. I think this is a great event. I think it was a successful event. I think you're all amazing. And you've probably touched students' hearts in ways that you can't see right now. And in years to come, we will see the fruits of doing events like this. Right? When maybe one of the students will be a lawyer in one of Judges Hernandez's courtrooms, or maybe a colleague of David in, you know, the housing embedderment for impoverished folks, right? And so I think that, you know, I would like to thank you all, and I would like to thank everybody who came to the event. Thank you so much for being here. And then I want to remind everybody to please complete the survey. It's meaningful for us. And so if you could all do that, please do so as soon as you can. And so I would also like to give a few seconds for Catherine to speak about her position as the Global Studies Coordinator. I think it might be helpful for some students.
Oh, sure. I won't say much because I want you to fill out the survey, but I do coordinate the Global Studies program. You can get an ADT here. There are also Global Studies programs at the colleges to which you may be transferring. There's great, you know, Social Justice Studies is a new concentration that's coming online. And of course, there's History and other great majors, but do be talking to your advisor about associate's degrees that you can earn on your way to completing your studies at a four-year.
Thank you, everybody. And I hope to hear from you all soon.
Thank you, panelists. I appreciate it. I owe you guys a favor back. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, panelists. And thank you to all the moderators who put this on. You're all the best.
Thank you for being here.
I'm going to go ahead and if our group can stay for a few minutes.
Yeah, we should stop the recording.
Yes.